As we've struggled to find some bottom line on quantum theory, each explanation of its implications has seemed to take us further and further from every precept of common sense. We try to reject each new violation of human intuition, only to find it relentlessly passing every rational and experimental test. Now Oxford physicist David Deutsch has been putting flesh and blood on the wildest idea yet. In 1957, Princeton graduate student Hugh Everett suggested that quantum mechanics makes sense only if there are many parallel universes. Deutsch supports that idea by reminding us of an old experiment in which we shine a beam of light through thin parallel slits onto photographic film. Only every other slit of light appears on the film. If we've arranged things correctly, the alternate projected slits show up only as darkness. Quantum theorists have tried to explain this by saying that photons interact like waves and cancel each other, but that calls for a hopeless tangle of underlying assumptions. Deutsch argues that it can work only if invisible shadow photons enter from a parallel universe and obstruct the flow of light. Bizarre as that may be, other physicists find it increasingly inescapable. Like so many quantum ideas, this seems to flow from logical necessity. It's one thing to speculate about parallel universes, but here we're asked to admit that on the quantum level, we actually interact with those other worlds. Think about the implications. Our lives are a sequence of choices. Stand up or sit down, turn left or turn right, strike out or forgive. If Deutsch is right, we opt into one universe or another every time we make any free will choice, no matter how small. There is, after all, no room for free will in a deterministic universe of pure cause and effect. Any free will decision has to be made below the scale of apparent cause and effect, and that's where we touch those alternate universes. All our other selves are out there living lives better or worse than our own. That wrong turn I took umpty-ump years ago simply separated me from another self who took the right turn. He's out there living that other life. Maybe he found fame and riches, only to suffer some disaster 6 months later. Do you want to reverse time and redo the past? Well, it's already been done. That other you, the one who did it right, is there, and maybe she wishes she'd taken the road you chose. If Deutsch is right, and all possible worlds exist, who's to name any one of them as more real than the others? Of course, we have to be skeptical. We have to doubt all this. We need to stay in touch with the solid earth while we finish the task of unraveling the mystery. So, try another recent point of view. Margaret Wertheim enters this arena through what we might see as a back door. In her book, Pythagoras' Trousers, God, Physics, and the Gender Wars, she asks, why are math and physics the last fields that have been opening up to women? Her answer takes shape as she looks at the relation between physics and religion, and that answer might be of some help as we try to cope with the yawning pit of modern physics. Many theoretical physicists are trying to formulate a theory of everything, a theory so broad, so far-reaching, that it encompasses the whole of things. Instead of standing over and against religion, as it seemed to do in the 19th century, physics is now moving into the heartland of religion itself. But physics and religion were never separate pursuits before the 17th century. The idea that they need to be kept apart has only been afoot for some 400 years. Now, once again, physicists are creating a literature couched in bluntly theological language. Nobel laureate Leon Lederman picks up that theme in his book, The God Particle. Cosmologist Stephen Hawking repeatedly invokes the mind of God in his physics. To make sense of that, Wertheim literally begins with Pythagoras' trousers. Pythagoras formed his religious commune in Italy around 600 BC. Contrary to Greek custom, the men grew beards and wore trousers, and it was only those trousered Pythagoreans who accepted women as intellectuals. Greece had generally denied women any place in the life of the mind. The Pythagoreans looked for God in music, math, and symmetry. Mathematical physics was their religion, and they set the pattern for physics for the next 2,200 years. But mathematicians and physicists were like any other priests. Outside the Pythagorean community, Greece gave women no part in priesthood. Plato's admiration for Pythagoras opened one crack in that armor of male dominance. When the medieval church formed around Neoplatonism, women finally regained a niche in the intellectual life. Only the Catholic priesthood and physics remained male. When natural philosophy, physics, split away from theology in the 17th century, the maleness of the priesthood stayed in place, and so it has done until very recently. Now two remarkable changes are occurring. The religious priesthood is opening back up to women for the first time in 3,000 years, and physics once more sees itself called upon to address questions that we'd split off and placed in the separate domain of religion. Where all this will come out is anyone's guess, but Wertheim suggests that theories of everything are by their nature as arcane as questions about angels dancing on heads of pins. Perhaps the inclusion of women in the priesthood of physics or of religion is part of the process of bringing it back to the hard earth. Perhaps both fields need to deal with the pastoral matter of our earthly sustenance as well as shaping us spiritually. Wertheim wonders if physics isn't ready to downplay questions about the mind of God in favor of questions about our physical nurture. And so we are faced with a variant on the old Manichaean heresy. Named after 3rd century Persian philosopher Mani, it claims that we struggle to overcome the evil darkness of material existence and reach the divine light, which is God. It's called a heresy because the Christian Church rejected the idea that the material world is evil. Obviously, darkness and light, material and spiritual things, matter and energy as well, have to coexist. Certainly, science needs to keep asking the abstract questions at the same time it struggles to deal with human need. The seemingly divergent views of Deutsch and Wertheim actually fuse into opposing facets of the same gem. The challenges of time and space become both material and abstract as our species is called to find its way into the reaches of space, and our inquiry stands upon that threshold today. Let us finish our look at time and space in the doorway formed by the fringes of our own atmosphere.